Nancy Menzies' interview with Charles Gusman, Doylestown, August 8, 1978. Mr. Gusman, I wonder if you could describe your work.
My work right now is writing a novel, which is a long, drawn-out process because I've never done a novel before. Before this, I've done television, radio, films, and my work process now is to think of ways to avoid writing. And I've been very successful at it. I'm on page 90 now, and I was on page 80 about 6 months ago, which is not great progress.
What's the novel then?
It started out to be a stage play. It was a friend of mine acquired the lease to a theater, the Leary Theater in Hammersmith in London. It was quite a good theater. During the war, it was the theater for Old Vic. And it fell on hard times, and the British government took it over. And my friend acquired the lease, the idea being to produce plays there, where it costs minimal money to produce a play, to mount one. There they could be mounted for $10,000, here it would be a minimum of $150,000. The idea was that they would produce one of my plays, which could be done with a half British and half American cast, then bring it over to Broadway. And I got an idea for it and started to work, and set to meet with the backers for this proposition, and we were to meet on Friday, November 22nd, 1963, which was the day that Kennedy was shot and everything went to pieces. So I have since resuscitated the idea as the basis of a novel. It started out to be a suspense story. It's become something more. That's why it's difficult to write. As everything I write, it requires emotional texture. And the emotional texture slows one down. You can't characters cease to be simply characters who walk through certain actions, but are people who relate in certain ways. And that's the tough part. That's what I'm doing.
Hey, maybe you tell me a little bit of how you came to live in Bucks County and what were your ideas about the county, if you had any at all, before you came.
Well, Bucks County, I came here in 1944. I thought a pretty old fellow at that time, although I was just turned 30. And Bucks County had already had the reputation of being the gathering place of writers. And also, at the time I decided to move here, I was living in Connecticut, which was ad man's paradise. And I particularly disliked the ambiance, term now. The farmers in Connecticut had fireproof hay, and they were suburbanized commuters. And I came here through at the invitation of a man by the name of Winwright. Winwright was then production manager of NBC radio, remember in those days. Although I'd already seen television, but I'd worked in television before that. Can you believe it? I managed to television station in 1935. What's that?
That must have been one of the first.
Well, yes, it was really, they were then working on the principle of a whirling disc, and the only picture that you could recognize on our screens was a heavily drawn drawing of the Mickey Mouse. But Winwright, who was, as I say, the production manager of NBC, was living in Dillington, which is where Dolan is.
Yes.
He and I have been friends for many, many years, and he invited me down here, as I say, in the summer of 44. I was doing rather well, earning a good deal of money, but I came down here to visit him and J. Stanley Lee of Newtown, an old settler, showed me a farm in now what is Holland. Then it was called Newtown, and casually, without spending more than 2 or 3 hours, not inquiring such things whether there were schools. By this time, I already had one child, a daughter. Didn't ask about schools, didn't ask about taxes or anything. I was in a mental funk of some sort, and I just haphazardly bought the farm in Bucks County, and almost once quit all my jobs, which indicated that I was not really happy with things the way they were, and planned to make myself into what I thought was a good writer, a real writer. And I came to the place where there were real writers. At that time, in Bucks County, there were, I would say, at least 60 prominent writers. I would say among them there were at least 10 Pulitzer Prize winners. Some of you may even remember there was Moss Hart, George Kaufman. Moss Hart lived on just off Aquitong Road, or on Aquitong Road. That's off 202, north of 202. George Kaufman's place was called Barley Sheaf, and it's not too far from Peddler's Village. Big, beautiful place, back behind a stone wall, as you drive on 202, you see that. And then there was there's Dorothy Parker. Now, I don't know whether Dorothy Parker's name means anything to you, but when I was in college, everybody quoted Dorothy Parker. She was it was one of her memorable verses was, "Men don't make basses of girls who wear glasses."
Yeah.
Gives you a place in immortality. And her wisecracks were widely circulated. One of them was, "If all the girls at the weekend prom were laid end to end, I wouldn't be a bit surprised." Things like that. But Dorothy Parker lived here up about 4 miles up around Dublin. She was entirely an urban woman, but really took to the farm. I never saw her on a farm. I saw her there quite often. And there were the Spivaks. They were playwrights who came to Bucks County for the peace and quiet that's going to let them write. And instead, they ended up driving East A to Trenton, where they rented an office to write. They wrote things like "Kiss Me, Kate," a great number of musicals and things like that. Very successful writers. They wrote "Boy Meets Girl," which is we have a generation gap here, or a generation or two gap. But these were very outstanding plays, this would be the early. "Boy Meets Girl" was in the late 30s, "Kiss Me, Kate" in the 40s. At the same time as Oscar Hammerstein was here, Oscar Hammerstein, who his place is, if you came up 202, it was on East Street, you can almost see it from 202. But he's been dead for about 10 or 12 years. He wrote to you. Oh, what Oscar Hammerstein?
Yes.
Well, another one of his proteges is Stephen Sondheim. He wrote "Ring on the Clowns" and "The West Side Story." Lyric writer. He also lived here. He recently said that he always remembers going over to Oscar Hammerstein's place on his bicycle across East Street. Hammerstein was here after I was here. Bud Schulberg. Bud Schulberg was the screenplay for "On the Waterfront," and had achieved a great deal of success for the novel called "What Makes Sammy Run," which was these were all. I assure you, these were all quite well received books. You know, and Bud is still around now. He's brings out a book every once in a while. I will not try to add the list now because it is endless. While there were a great number of writers, there was not an awful lot of socializing among them. They had some friends, but for the most part, writers are not. They are gregarious, but they're not. They don't socialize too much among other writers. I don't know why. Possibly because people always think that there might be a fear of somebody stealing. Somebody else's ideas. It doesn't happen really. Of course, I have had writers steal ideas from me too, but I was never certain whether they did it on purpose or whether just unconsciously they did.
Yeah.
But it's not the fear. It's not the reason writers don't socialize. They just don't. Well, however, they knew each other. We all went to each other's houses. But as for close friends, we didn't have close friends with other writers. Well, I have to deny that, but Schubert was my closest friend for quite a long time.
But it wasn't a collective?
No, they didn't get together because they were writers.
Right.
It was, there were usually writers attracted other performers, actors and such. And of course, Bucks County was a weekend place. I think many of the writers moved here because it was close to New York. It was, for a time after I moved here, I had a staff job in New York at ABC, and I commuted every day, which I didn't particularly like, but didn't find it impossible. I would catch a 7:30 train, be in New York at about 8:30, and in the studio by 9 o'clock. So it's almost like commuting to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Much more pleasant, however, because you drive to Trenton, get on the train, and immediately go to the dining cars. In those days, they had dining cars, and you could sit and talk to your friends all the way in, and they're a wonderful group there. Here again, I have to try a lot, give you a lot of names that you won't know, but I guess the greatest orchestra leader of from about 1920 on was Paul Whiteman. And Paul Whiteman was the one who was always on the train there. And Oscar Hammerstein was one I often met there. I remember one this last winter with a terrible snowstorm. I remember another time back about 1947 when I arrived at the Trenton station. And there was Oscar Hammerstein being driven to the bullet, snow, terrible snowstorm. He never learned to drive a car, but he arrived in the Jeep, being driven, terrible day. And I said, why are you going into New York on a day like this? He said, oh, I have some dumb meeting I have to go to. So that afternoon, I bumped into him. He was headed for the same dumb meeting I was headed for. This was during the war. We were going to meetings of the Writers' War Board. But so through the sleet, storm, and dark of night, like postmen, we went plunging into New York. This is the way we began our days on the train. And I guess there were usually 10 or 12 writers that you could talk to if you wanted to. Or it was possible to write on the train. Many times I could put in and get in about at least a half hour writing. Would you have any other questions on that?
Well, maybe I can ask you how you feel about the county now. What do you feel it offers? Or in the past, what do you feel it offers artists, writers, whatever, artistically?
Graphic artists.
In terms of financial support or, you know, commercial support, educational opportunities.
I think the artists will prosper any place where a great number of artists get together. I think that the markets come to them. The idea of taking the arts right to every village, Middlesex, farm is not practical. I think people will always come to where the artists are. Bucks County has always drawn them anyway because of antique shopping, and it's always been a great arts colony here. While I knew them and associated with them, they've been here longer than possibly longer than the writers. I think the first writer who came here was, the first writer is a guy named John Wexler, who still lives near Ottsville. He wrote, you know him? Anyway, he wrote a play called The Last Mile, and it was the play that brought Spencer Tracy to prominence, and later it was done in Hollywood, and Clark Gable got his start. So it was a pretty good vehicle, and Mr. Wexler is still up in Ottsville, and he's writing mostly things about the Rosenbergs, kind of what they used to call during the radical days of the 20s, called agitprop stuff. Mm-hmm. He may have been the first. Then S.J. Perlman moved here. But there again, I'm afraid you don't know S.J. Perlman, but he was on the Dick Cavett show last week. He is, you would know him He wrote the screenplay for Around the World in 80 Days. Do you remember that movie?
Yes.
He wrote this, but he would, I guess he would be the America's number one humorist. He would be, I think you'd describe him as the Woody Allen of his day, kind of a mad, mad writer. He was, and...
Is he still in Moscone?
And no, he moved away about 5 years ago. He wishes he had not moved. He thought that England would be more civilized. And he went there and found them not at all as civilized as he had remembered them. By this time, he had sold out his place. He had a place up near Irwinna. And I gather now that he would like to be back here. He came here about 1936, and his brother-in-law was Nathaniel West, another name which will draw a blank, except I can say that it was his book that they made the movie The Day of the Locust recently. That was his brother-in-law, and his brother-in-law was married to his wife's sister. His wife's sister was the sister of Pep West, and Pep West married Eileen McKinney, who was the Eileen of my sister Eileen. You remember the play and they had done the movies? We do have a generation gap, don't we? Yes, now Sid Berman still writes for the New Yorker, and he's up, he's, I guess, close to 70, but still quite a funny man. He may have been about the second year. Then there were a lot of lesser writers. Lesser in the fact they're not so well known. Some of them were quite respected writers.
Do you feel that Bucks County is changing in respect that it doesn't draw, you know, artists, musicians, writers, or, you know, it's not really offering that much?
It's not the change in Bucks County in that regard. It's because the world in which they operated has changed. For example, many work in the theater, and theater is the people who write in the, work in the theater have to live on two coasts. Many are able to succeed in New York, but I was in Hollywood. I was a carpetbagger. I couldn't stand living there. I would go there, get my assignments, and then come home because I just don't like California. And an awful lot of writers, particularly, and actors too, just don't like California. And
you're saying that's not possible to do anymore?
It's, well, not for actors, writers. It's also out of you can see there are still as many writers in the world today, and I can think of only five or six. Successful writers who are living here now. Sam Gallew, who is the one who wrote Give Him Hell Hair. And there's Alfie Bester, who's not too well known, but he's a well-known science fiction writer. He lives up at Ottsville. John Wexley is still here, of course. And in the radio and television field, John Hess, who still is what I was until I gave it up, carpetbagger. He lives about a quarter of a mile from the old Moss Hart place.
He's still doing that.
I saw a script of his on MASH recently. But the writers of the old days, only because there's no commuting now, as once was quite necessary to commute to New York a lot, and it is no longer necessary to do that. Any commuting would be done would be to California. I would go out maybe 4 and 5 times a year. So that has changed, and of course, up here the general atmosphere has not changed. But where my farm is, I only own 5 acres now. I've had 65 now, and within the next 4 or 5 years, it'll be little houses all around me. It's part of what is called village shires. I don't know.
Yes.
It now surrounds me there, and for the last 35 years, I haven't been able to see a single house from my farm. Now I will be seeing them while I have 5 acres and they can't build within 30 feet of my line, and two of the things are on the plat to be park areas. I will be more or less open there, but it won't be the same. It's there were.
So do you feel that the commercial development in Bucks County has had an effect on people choosing to live here?
Yeah. guess I don't think they would come here now looking for a country.
Solitude.
No, it still is. The solitude is still here if you want it. But it isn't the same sort it used to be. There's a difference in the people. There used to be a greater homogenization. Writers would often come to a place like this because they didn't want to meet other writers and other advertising people and things like that. They would like to know the baker and the shoemaker and the insurance salesman. They wanted a homogenized group of friends, and they didn't want everybody to have the same, roughly the same income. This is what has happened in California. One of the reasons that I have never liked it, they simply would take great orange groves and pave it over with little ticky-tacky houses. And while the houses here are a little bit better than they are in California, you move in an entire, just like taking your whole Elks Club and moving it in your neighborhood, you have no diversification of it. And I think that the lifeblood of a writer's life is meeting persons of different social intellectual viewpoint. And that is not here. I suppose they could be found, they could be sought out. There was a magnet in the old days to attract them. For example, a man with whom I collaborated on a show lived only about 7 miles from me, and it meant that every morning he would either drop in on me or I'd drop in on him. Bud Schober originally, Bud in those days lived at Stoopville. You know where that is?
No.
Stoopville is about two or three miles out of Newtown. There were certain groups of friends who would get together. It wasn't often there were large gatherings of writers. I could think of one that was represented what people used to think a writer's life in Bucks County would be. There was a party at, or an evening at Moss Hart's place. Moss Hart, I suppose, was, along with George Kaufman, the most successful writer at the time. He had a succession of about 20 big hits on Broadway, a great number of movies to his credit, and his wife is Kitty Carlisle, whom you may know from such things as What's My Line?
To Tell the Truth.
Talk to Tell the Truth, yes. And they had a place on Aquaton Road. It was about Moss Hart's place that famous line was quoted. Wolcott Gibbs saw what Moss had done in remodeling this place and said, "This gives you an idea what God could do if he had enough money." In other words, Moss had really put an awful lot of money into it. It was not a, it started out as a Bucks County farmhouse, but it had a, with enough decorators that it looked a little bit more like a Hollywood set. There were five playwrights. There was Moss, Jerry Chedaroff, his brother, Bud Schoenberg, Kitty Carlisle, and the entertainment of the evening was to roll down a movie screen and run a movie that he had written called Cover Girl. That was social life among the writing folks in Bucks County. However, as a result of this evening, I stayed later along with Bud Schoenberg, and sitting in front of the fireplace, I encouraged Bud to tell the story of his experience with F. Scott Fitzgerald, and what he told of this true experience he had resulted in the writing of one of his novels called The Disenchanted, which later became a movie. And it there was that bit of writer's cross-fertilization shown there. But for the most part, writers met at openings of bookstores. Virginia Clark's bookstore was opened there, and there were also, when new books were brought out, they would have book signing cocktail parties put on by the publishers. And there you would run into your friends who were also writers, because the publishers got them out to get blurbs for the books.
Yeah.
It was And as you can see, there's none of that going to happen now, because they're just, there are not enough writers to make it really a writer's column. There is a chance, certainly is going to be a writer's, artist colony. It will continue to be, because it...
So you're saying, even though in the past there wasn't a very tight collective support among writers, there were definitely functions such as the book writing and the opening of bookstores that still, you know, lent that support.
And another thing that encouraged writers to move here will be something that would surprise people now, is that it's so inexpensive. My farm, which over the years, having sold it off, has brought in about maybe $150,000 money, is still now worth around $200,000, and I only paid $17,000 for it back in 1944. And this is Dorothy Parker only paid about $7,000 for a place, about 120 acres, but she bought it back in 1936. It's just wonderful to be able to do things that far back.
Do you have much contact with artists in Wisconsin?
No longer. The artists I know either have died or just don't see them now. They were older artists. Joe Davison was the closest. He was a sculptor who was, I guess, that goes back too far. He did a great bust of Roosevelt. You remember him, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Before your time, yes. All the climate is here for artists, because the countryside hasn't changed a great deal. There's still great landscapes. There's still the things that were painted 50 years ago are still great subjects. And the things to photograph are still there. And I guess the living is pretty relaxed here too. I can't compare it with anything. But as long ago as 20 years ago, the writers I knew were always saying, where are you going to go? And I always meant, where are you going to move after the old open grounds are trying to do little houses. And for the most part, they have gone far away places. Some on Prairie Foot have died. But the ones who didn't like California still don't like California. And writers who didn't live here, wanted to live here, and spend a lot of time looking for places. Back in the old days, weekends were, the trains coming down Friday nights were old home weeks for people on Broadway, because they say, where are you going? I'm going up to see so-and-so. Where are you going? Where are you going? And it was and on Sundays or Saturdays, there would be running back and forth, driving, wild driving the countryside, and a little bit of drinking. It's pleasant, and it's gone forever, I'm afraid. Now, Doylestown is another thing. Let me tell you why I'm here.
Okay.
I don't know how much shit. In 1964, I went to Hollywood to write a pilot for Paramount Pictures, a television series they wanted, and they didn't tell me exactly what they wanted. I found out later what they wanted was a copy of Perry Mason, but they turned me loose to write what I wanted to write. And I wrote something called Courthouse Square. And when it came time to shoot the pilot, I went to the back lot. They usually, for series, they would use, have one big permanent set. As for example, I noticed in Carter Country, there's one shot of the town. I recognize that because it's a certain section of the building out in Hollywood. I guess you'll notice all the locations. But I went to the back lot and they had built a permanent set. And it was exactly right over there. It's Court Street from Broad to Pine. There's a beautiful house over there called Lawyer's Row. And they've been there for hundreds, maybe some 200 years. And it was reproduced in every detail. And And I went to the set designer and I said, how did you happen to hit on a design like that? He said, I don't know. We looked up where you were from and figured out that's what you had in mind. And of course, he was right, because in the old days, when I would dry up, I would hit a block in writing. In order to keep my mind active, I used to come up to the old courthouse. Where this courthouse is, there was a beautiful old stone building. And there was one enormous center courtroom. It must have been 80 to 100 feet octagonal. It was unique in that regard. It was an octagonal thing, and it was an unsupported arch. I guess the domed arch, or the roof, was about 40 to 50 feet high. Enormous room, and wood paneled all around it. And I used to come up here and sit and watch the court cases, just to kind of observe human nature. Anyway, this plaque didn't sell, but about 6 years ago, I looked it over and I thought, well, this would make a good novel. And then I realized that I had lost touch with Doylestown. I hadn't been up here in a number of years. But I called Wynn James, who's a real estate man over here, a friend of mine, and I said, Wynn, I might be interested in buying a small place near the courthouse. Well, this is the small place near the courthouse. As you see, this is 27 rooms. And the idea was that I was going to write Courthouse Square, which is the title of the series, and write it into a novel. But I've been here 6 years and I haven't written a word of it, and I'm still writing about Mexico, which is...
Are you planning to finish
that? The novel? Yes. I don't know. It's far down the list. But when I was living in Mexico, people used to say to me, are you going to write something about Mexico? And knowing the nature of the occupation, I said, yes, I may write about it someday, but I'll be in a sauna in Finland. So writers don't sit on top of the thing as a photographer doesn't take a picture. It takes a long time for it to gel, to coalesce, whatever it does.
Do you plan to stay in Mexico?
Oh, yes. I've continued to look for other places to go, but I've never seen any place I like as well. But you see, I still have what I had in the old days. My farm was built in 1720, so you can see that the house was built in 1720. There's nothing much likely to change about it. It's a pleasant living. And there is a lack of Vixen. That's my dog Vixen, who's getting on with her beard. She's speaking a language of all, which is called Bull. And also called Vixen Fuera. Rouse.
So you still think that Bucks County is still a good place for writers and artists?
Because there is no such thing as a good place for writers, I guess. I am certainly not Californian. When I went to live in Mexico, my agent said to me, please, Chuck, don't go there, because nobody ever went to Mexico or wrote anything again. And this is true of writers go to California, they never write anything again. And Californians, they don't know. I think life has no texture there. I had at the studio I was in Paramount, one of the windows looked out on the street, which kids pass through on the way to school. And I never saw a kid on the way to school skipping or coming out of home. They're little vegetables. There is no texture right there. Also, the non-stratification of the living places there. You go into Beverly Hills, almost everybody is in show business one way or another. If you go into and it may be something the weather or the water does, but people have challenged me and said, yeah, there are a lot of great writers in Hollywood and write. And I said, can you think of anything? But nothing. It really
really can't. Even the great films were not written in Hollywood. The greatest film, I think, was Citizen Kane, which may have been written there. It was written and conceived largely by Orson Welles, very well-established California disliver. And writers like Huxley went there, never wrote anything. Of course, they went there at an advanced age, but they never wrote anything really significant. Stravinsky went there, but he died there. He didn't write anything. So it's where the elephants go to die. And it would be interesting to figure out why it was. When I would go out there, and I was, my friends would say, think that I had at last changed my mind about living in the East, and they would say, how do you like it? Very enthusiastic. I said, not too well. I remember the plaintiff told me, my one friend says, Chuck, what's not to like? Well, it does seem perfect. It's idyllic, except that there's no texture to it. For me, I mentioned Bud Schulberg earlier. Bud was, while not born in California, went there when he was 5 years old. His father was the president of Paramount Pictures. Big, well, he spent his life there, and he never liked Hollywood. And he and I used to talk about why we didn't like it. About 15 years ago, I saw in the paper that Bud Schulberg, after all these years of hating California, decided he likes it more. And I called him up and said, what made up your mind that you like California? And I said, I haven't changed my mind, but I get tired of people telling people I hate it. And Bud is now back living in out on out the Hamptons, out on Long Island. So there is a. So I think that one of the great advantages Bud Scotting will always have is that it's not California. Because California is really, people out there always thought when I was going back east, they said, how can you stand New York? Well, I'm not going back. I'm saying I'm not going back to New York. Well, I still like New York City. I would not live there. And they don't understand. They think that it's Lewisland out there. And indeed it is. But it's not, it certainly, it kills one's creative urges.